This is Lightning Power Lunch with Dave Mishkin and Greg Linnelli on Lightning Radio.
We got to come out here, obviously, in front of our home fans to give us a little boost, but we got to pull together a full 60 minutes. You know, we got to come out hard and, you know, we got to stick to our structure, you know, just doing the little things right for a full 60 minutes.
I mean, it's nice to score four first, but at the same time, I mean, you saw last game, came back, it didn't matter. It came, went to OT, and it was decided in OT. So, I mean, it is nice scoring first, but if not, no sweat. Just get right back to work, believe in the team, have confidence, have a little swagger out there that we're going to come on top.
It comes down to 50-50 battles. And, you know, at time, I think, you know, they've been better than us at that. And when we've had our chances, like, we've been better at that. So when it comes down to it, you know, 50-50 battles are big.
Yeah, they are big. Tonight's game's big. You go down 0-3, I'll just come out and say that's not a good situation.
Are you willing, Greg, to concede that the Lightning do need to play a full 60 tonight? I know you were smiling when you heard that.
I can't go that way. You know how I feel about the 60.
I know.
Now, if you want to go 55 minutes.
Well, here's how 50? I would interpret the full 60. So it jives with your feeling, which is an accurate feeling. Like, you are not going to be able to dictate the terms of a hockey game for a full 60 minutes. There is another opponent on the ice, and the other opponent has a vote. But I think when I hear quotes like that, the way I process it is, we are acknowledging that the other team may surge, but we need to hold fast to the things that are going to give us success, even when the wind is in our face. And if we can do that for a full 60, we'll give ourselves a very good chance to win. So that, yeah, you may be stuck in your own zone, but you're not giving up grade A chances. You're not having egregious turnovers when the other team is having a momentum surge of its own. That's how I would take it. But I think your point is a good one that, excuse me, you're not going to just be able to put your foot on the throat of the opponent for a full 60, which is what I think we think about when we hear we need to play for a full 60.
I think that's accurate.
Yeah.
And Brian Engblom, who's going to be
joining us. Yeah, actually, he just walked in. So perfect timing.
Yeah, I'm completely out of breath. That's the farthest I've run in 6 years, Mish, as you know.
Well, if you had only prepared and played the full 60, which is Greg hates the full 60, and we just heard Cirelli say we need to play a full 60 tonight. So if you had played the full 60, I think that you would be in shape to make it to the studio.
Yeah.
But what do you think about that? Like I was saying, I think what he means is that even if the other team has a momentum surge, we kind of hold fast to our tenets of how we want to play and not give up any freebies, even though we're not going to be able to dictate the terms of the game for a full 60.
Yeah, that's true. It's one or two mistakes extra that they've made, whether it's, you know, giving up a power play goal against or, you know, the overtime goal, whatever. It's a game of mistakes. As Coop has pointed out after both games, pretty fine line, you know, small margin for error. So every shift all the time. And I think, you know, players are just trained to say that full 60 minutes because they're because what they're trying to reinforce is, yeah, every shift, if that's your man, you better have him every shift from the first one on. And making plays, et cetera, and, you know, how they have to play and get some more shots. That's it. It's where they have to move the puck, I think, especially the first line. I think Cooch will be terrific tonight. I thought he got better as the game went on in game two. They took him away a lot. He didn't have his greatest game. He was a little bit off, and hey, he's carried the team all season long. It happens to everybody. So the first half of the game, it just wasn't happening. You know, he wasn't handling the puck the way he normally does. Anyway, it wasn't all his fault. But when things are going like that, you have to go in straight lines and revert back to just good old basic hockey. Straight lines, don't overpass, don't overthink it. Get, you know, shoot the puck. So I think you're going to see Cooch shooting on the power play from that right, the right wing side on the rush and his movement in the offensive zone, because Florida is one of the best defensive teams in the league. They back check through the middle and they come back hard. And I'm sure that they have been coached to say, you are never too late coming back, ever, because this team Tampa likes to pass the puck. They like to get the goaltender moving. They like what they like, moving the puck in the offensive zone. You're never too late coming back. Pick somebody up. We'll turn these pucks over and go. And that has been true in a lot of cases. So when that happens, if you're the Lightning, you got to drive in straight lines. You got to drive wide. And you got to take shots from the outside, whereas normally in a lot of other games you may not do that. And then you go for, you know, rebounds and scrambles and things like that, at least to spread them out and loosen them up a little bit. So I think you'll see more of that as this game and this series goes on.
Brian, how do you think the Lightning have played so far through two games?
I think they played fine. There's a lot of things I liked. I remember saying to Dave Randorf right after the first game, right after it was over, I said, I didn't mind that game. I really didn't mind it. I was actually pleasantly surprised at how efficient the Lightning were coverage-wise away from the puck in their own end. And that starts with the 2D men, any 2D men that are out there. Coverage in front of the net. I'm not talking about being close to them. I'm talking about being on the proper side of them, being right on them, taking away opportunities for cross-ice passes, for rebounds, conscientious checking before that guy gets the puck. Those things are critically important in the playoffs. And I was pleasantly surprised, to be honest with you, in game one and game two. So better than they were in, I would say, a good 90% of the games during the regular season. They got much better the last couple of weeks of the season, getting ready for the playoffs. I thought it was horrendous the first 2 months of the season. Some changes in their own zone, whatever. Coverage was mind-boggling sometimes, to be honest with you. I complained to you, Dave, so many times on the bus, on the road, on the way back. But I thought they did a good job. So they're in there. It's just, you know, a little bit here or there. It's a fine line in these playoffs, and they got to find that extra goal, and because you can't go down 3-0.
I agree with you, Brian. I feel, especially after game one, I was impressed with how well they defended, and that was my takeaway. But the reality is, they're facing a team that can also defend very well. And they have had a hard time in five of the six periods generating much of anything. Why were they able to generate in the second period of game two? And what can they take from that period to help them moving forward in the series to try and generate more?
Momentum's a big thing. You win a couple of face-offs. Look, go back to the Hagel goal. You know, face-off win, shot to the net, another shot to the net. He's the third guy. And then next thing you know, that's the momentum after that. When Braden Point finally scored the goal early in the second game, boom, now they got some momentum. You need that juice. You need the positive reinforcement. But because that's the kind of team they are. They're not the type of team. You have to have that mentality, but you have to have the mentality of we have to be able to win 1-0. If you can play like we can win 1-0 because we have a great goaltender, if we are really that good and that sound defensively, and Vasi gives us the saves we need, which has always been his MO. Vasi doesn't need to be perfect because the Lightning can score, but it's going to be instead of scoring 4 or 5, it's going to be 2, maybe 3 goals. So you have to have that attitude of you can't give up 3 goals. You just can't. And Coop's been saying that the last couple of years, yeah. You know, in the playoffs, right? It's not what you get, it's what you give up. So you maintain that attitude, and I think he feels like, okay, we'll make some adjustments on the attack, and we'll do some more shooting from certain angles. Don't miss the net so much. That would certainly help. And you go from there.
What do you make of Max Crozier's play in game two?
I liked him. I thought he was just fine. He amazes me. You know, that was his first game in the playoffs. He stepped in. He didn't seem to have any nerves at all. He plays hard. He's got some stones. He skates very well. Got great feet. Really good hands. He has better hands than Lilleberg. They are opposites. Lilleberg's very old-fashioned, one hand on the stick backing up, hammers guys, as we've seen, plays very physical, is okay with the puck, has improved. Crozier is the opposite. He's got great feet. He moves really well laterally. There's motion to his game. He's got really good hands. Not shy. Gets up on the play. Littlebird gets up on the play, too. He's aggressive jumping up on the play. I like that from both. But they are kind of opposites, and they played together, which is understandable. As soon as I see him for, you know, two shifts, I go, oh, yeah, those two would fit because they do different things. They don't play exactly the same way. It's hand and glove, and they sort of have both aspects covered. And Crozier was more the power play guy, Lilleberg more the penalty-killing guy. So it fits. I like them both just fine.
We don't know the lineup with any certainty tonight, but based on who was out late and who wasn't out late, looks like the Lightning may be going back, though, to what we saw in Game 1, which means Crozier wouldn't play. Are you surprised that the possibility exists that after a game like he had in Game 2 that the Lightning would give him the night off?
I'm not really surprised. I didn't ask Nick Perbix directly, but I just got a feeling that Perbix might be back in the lineup.
Right.
I'm guessing that they'll go. I don't think they'll go with 7D.
And right. So they don't want five righties.
that would take Crozier back out. And I think probably the reason that he had 7D, 11 and 7 last game is because Crozier got called up, and because he was a rookie and because he was going to play the two rookies together because they are familiar, if it was going sideways and they were overwhelmed, he needed to have DeHaan in there because DeHaan's an experienced guy, right? And DeHaan ended up playing, 10 or 11 minutes or something, more than he has some other nights. And he's a lefty, right? So this lefty and righty thing is tough. And that's where the whole Sergachev thing, man, if he could come back anytime soon, it would change the entire series, because Hedy plays 25 minutes, Sergey, 25 minutes. You got 50 minutes right there of the game that's covered by guys who are damn good, right? So that changes how you control the game. But until that happens, you know, you got to piece it together. But that left side is still, there's a void there, and they're trying to patch it up. With if it's Perbix again tonight, I thought he played well in Game 1. He's had his times, his issues at times playing the offside, but so is Dumba. And if I had to choose, I'd go with Perbix too. I like him better on that offside. I think he is getting more used to it. He'd get lost a little bit out there on regroup sometimes. You get too wide or you're in the wrong place and then go, oh, geez, you know, I got to get over here. We'll see what they do. So I'm going on the fact, my gut is that he'll be back in, and I'm guessing they'll go 12 and 6, but I don't know that for sure.
Brian Engblom joins us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Radio as we get you set for Game 3 tonight at Amalie Arena. I'll just ask you the question from the particular fan who's listening right now, because we get this question a lot, especially after Game 1, Brian. Andrew says, Nikita Kucherov has been quiet in this series, only mustering a couple of power play assists. Has he just been off his game, or have the Panthers just been containing him well?
Yeah, he only has a couple of assists. Well, he's still ahead of I don't know how many guys on the Lightning, but we just expect so many, you know, great things from him all the time. I did feel like he was a little off in Game 2. I didn't mind him in Game 1. I just thought he had a slow start in Game 2, was a little frustrated, turned some pucks over, but he got it going in the second half. And they just play him through it. Even if they go with, you know, the 12 and 6, you know, four complete lines, Cooch is still going to get double shifted. There's no doubt about that. And John Cooper is very good at home ice advantage. He's learned a lot since he was a rookie in the league. And you learn from coaching against great coaches. Coop's a really quick study, so he'll get his guys out, whether it's on the fly, but certainly on faceoffs, because he gets the last change. And those things, when you have one goal differences night after night, those things matter. So Cooch is going to get his 22, 23 minutes, I'll bet you, at least in this game, depending on how it goes, maybe even more. But I don't blame him by any means. I just thought he was a little bit off, but they have played him very tightly, that's for sure. But he's used to that. He's used to getting smothered very quickly. That's why he makes those one-touch passes, you know, all the time, because he knows somebody's right on him. lot of times he gets the puck and he's already decided where it's going. So he just one touches it across the ice or down low beside the net if he's on the power play in, you know, in the offensive zone. So don't worry about him. He'll find a way. He's fought through this many times. And look, he's got to get a feel for how they're playing him too. The year, what was it? What year was it? 21 when he missed most of the end of the season and then came
the whole
in,
season.
Yeah, whole regular season. And then came in the playoffs. He dismantled Florida in a 5-on-5, but especially on the power play. They hadn't seen him. They had no feel for him. And that, to me, I remember I kept saying that. They have no feel for Kucherov. They have no feel. He hasn't been around. They've forgotten how good he is and how quick he is. He made plays and passes and scored goals. He tore them apart. Well, it's different this year. They know him. They're really prepared for him. And the fact that he had 144 points, yeah, we'll kind of get, and 100 assists will get your attention. Coop brought up a pretty good point where they're on Cooch to shoot the puck again more, which he was doing more in the first half plus of the season. But for obvious and very good reasons, he started passing the puck a lot at the end of the year. Why? 100 assists. And God love him. I do that too, Dave. That's the way it should be, right? I mean, let the guy go for the record, and Coop gave him every chance to do it. So he was passing. I mean, he could have got a hat trick in the last game or two, and he would have gone, oh, no, I don't want that. I don't want the hat trick. I want, you know, the assist to get to 100. Good for him. He got it. But he was back in that mode of passing. So now they're going to go, hey, okay, you got the 100 assists. This is different. You got to shoot the puck. And when you shoot the puck, that'll open other guys. Don't worry about him. 86 will be just fine.
We talk about the home team having the last change as an advantage, and it is an advantage. I'm sure every coach would like to have last change, but sometimes it feels like less of an advantage for the home team based on the other team and the matchups. In this instance, Forsling has been in Kucherov's back pocket through the first two games. Paul Maurice made sure he's their best overall defenseman, and he got him out against Kucherov. If they can get Kucherov in a different matchup against either Mikkola or Ekman-Larsson, the two other lefty Ds, does that, something as simple as that, does that change the dynamic and speak to how good Forsling is?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up because that's exactly, you know, what I was thinking. Forsling is a very overlooked, underrated player. I think he's their best overall defenseman, and he is proving that here in this series. He scored 10 goals during the regular season, 10. Ekblad has been hurt a lot. That's always been his MO. He was the number one draft pick, and, you know, he's the star that everybody looks at. And he's played with Ekblad in this series. Ekblad is still really rounding back into form because he missed the last six games of the regular season. I remember Paul Maurice said, oh, it'll probably take him two or three games to really get back into form. He has not been on the power play, and he's a power play guy. And then Brandon Montour, for me, is also right up there at the top as far as two-way terrific defenseman. He gets not enough publicity around the league in general. Montour is heavy. He's got a big-time shot from the point, good on the power play, and he can defend. So you've got those three guys, and when you have sort of a big three, two of them play together, and Montour is on a different group with Mikkola, they have a group of D, especially their top four. They are really tough to play against, but Forsling has done a hell of a job. He's a very intelligent guy. He knows when to get close to Kucherov, when not to, when it's the wrong time to challenge him, because he surveys, like, where's Braden Point? Where's Duclair? You know, or if it's a power play. They're looking away, and you have to hand it to their penalty killers, too, and even the back checkers, is that, okay, Kucherov, when he takes the zone and it's on the rush, we got to haul back and get there. You got to go right to Point. You got to go right to Hedman coming on to play. You got to go right to Duclair, because what does Kucherov want to do? He wants to pass the puck to those guys. So, yes, we'll let our defense get on Kucherov, but don't overload on him. That's what he wants. He'll find the open guy, and you're in big trouble. So as a group of five, they have really done their homework on Kucherov. So he'll make some adjustments, and one of those will be shoot the puck.
Brian Engblom joins us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Radio. For our audience, Brian, going into this series and after two games, where do you think the Lightning have their biggest advantage, if at all, against the Panthers?
Special teams, and it's not by a lot. Power play speaks for itself. Number one in the league, and it was number one most of the year. Now, power plays will come and go. And the fact that even though they lost game one when they scored that power play goal, Stammer's goal was a power play goal, I went, good. Okay, they lost the game, but I thought that was really important. Kucherov made the pass, right? And Stammer scored an unstoppable goal. I mean, that was beautiful. Maybe his best goal of the year. I mean, the goaltender got there, but it was over his shoulder by about the width of the puck, right under the bar, right? So it's unstoppable. So good for Stammer, good for Cooch, good for Hedman that they made that happen. So I went, okay, that's something good to take away. So the power play, when it gets rolling, it creates so much momentum, so much fear for Florida. So that's an edge they have. Their penalty killing has been terrifically consistent all season long. Now, Florida's, their grouping of power play and penalty kill where they rank, they're good too. They're just not as good. The 5-on-5 game, I said it at the beginning, if the top two lines of the Lightning end up in the minus column, 5-on-5, at the end of the series, towards the end of the series, series is over and Florida's going on to the next round. I've felt that all the way along. Yes, you can steal a game or two. I don't know that you can steal an entire series on a power play. That's a real stretch. So if, and their top two lines are really good. They're all plus players. Some of them are big plus players. They dominate because they're really good and conscientious defensively. So if the top two lines of Florida outplay the top two lines of the Lightning, statistically, in these next two games again, the series is going to be over real quick. Those guys have to do the job 5-on-5 and not get scored against, the point line and the Cirelli line.
We've seen our first somewhat significant injury in the series. Sam Bennett is going to miss about a week. He missed most of game two. So in response, at least in game two, they moved Anton Lundell onto that line. He made the play on the overtime winner. But when you take your third line center and make him your second line center, now you have to have someone else play in the middle on the third line, whether it's Stenlund or someone else. Maybe Lomberg comes back in. He was under the weather for game two. How significant is Bennett's absence going to be in terms of how the Lightning can attack Florida and what Florida can do to the Lightning?
It's really big. This is a big advantage for the Lightning. Bennett's a heck of a player. He's a terrific number two center behind Barkov. What a 1-2 combination that is, because they have different looks on their top lines. Barkov is as good as it gets. He's a great two-way player. And there's movement in their game. I talked to Duclair about that because he had played with both Barkov at times and with Bennett. And he said it is very different feel when you play wing with those guys. And Bennett's an old-fashioned grinder and in your face and punch you in the back of the head when nobody's looking. And, you know, but at the same time, he's got skill. He can make plays. He can cause turnovers and then turn the puck over and make the play. Those guys are special. So He's in deep. He's on the defenseman. You get worried when you see Bennett is right behind you and you're the defenseman going back for a puck on the end wall in your own zone. Like, okay, first of all, he can hurt me. Second of all, he can steal the puck, and then he's going to the net, and it's going to be bad. So all those things, Bennett brings an awful lot. And he's got Tkachuk on his wing and Verhaeghe. That's a hell of a line. So with him coming out, as you mentioned, now it disrupts that line. Now it's got a different feel. Lundell's a really good player, but he is a third line center. Now he's got to be a second line. And then the fourth line center's got to move up to three, on and on and on. So now it's a different feel. You're disrupting three of the four lines, basically. And then who plays where and when? Bennett plays a lot of big, important minutes and matchup minutes, 5-on-5. So you have all those things going on. So it's a tall order for Florida to fill in for Bennett, no doubt about that. And Coop will be looking to take advantage of that in a big way in Game 3 and Game 4.
Brian Engbaum joining us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Radio. All right, so what are you anticipating here, Game 3? I mean, they often say, unless you're facing that elimination game, Brian, it's not a must-win. Does that narrative change even when you're down 0-2 against a team like the Panthers if you lose Game 3? How are you viewing what we're going to find out tonight, and what do you think of the Lightning coming out and dictating some play here?
Well, as we know, 3-0 is pretty much a death sentence most of the time So you play this game like it's a game seven. You have to have that kind of mentality. You have to do everything you can to win this game. And at the end of the night, you have to be inside out and go, okay, what was the score again? Okay, did we win? Is it 2-1? Okay. I mean, that's kind of the mentality you have to have. Because if you go down 0-3, yeah, then you just start going, well, you start to hear, you know, all the cliches big time then, and the shrug of the shoulders, and go, hey, we're not going to quit. We're just going to do this. We're just going to do that. Well, this is every – Coop has said first two games, hey, a lot of good things, but we didn't win. And this is playoff hockey. You have to win. It's totally different than playing in November or January or February going, okay, well, we lost that game. We're doing good things. You know, Coop would go, oh, we're all right. We're all right. We're not all right. We lost the game, and he's made that very clear. Yeah, I like this, like that. Win the game. Win the game. That's it. And the core players know exactly what that means. And so you can see them come out. They will try to set the tone early, make some big plays. Don't get over-aggressive. Don't start hunting, you know, and looking for big hits and running out of position, because this Florida team's really good, and that would be a big mistake. Get out there, yeah, play with energy, get the puck deep, do all those things that they always do when they're playing well at home. And nothing more, but certainly nothing less.
Last one for me, Brian, when you look around the rest of the league, other first-round series. In the East, the home team with the home ice advantage has done well.
Yeah.
Up 2-0 and 3 the series, and the Bruins just earned back that
right.
home ice advantage with a win against Toronto. The West has been all over the map, like 1-1 in a bunch of series. Vegas is the road team, up 2-0. What have you made of what you've seen so far around the league?
Well, I've always maintained that it takes two games to make a series. Whether you get smacked in the first game and lose by 4 or 5 or 6, or you lose in overtime. And then what do you do in game two? So what does it look like for both teams? Both teams are responsible there. Sometimes the team that wins by 4 goals in game one comes out and a little too overconfident. They have a bad start, start stumbling, and next thing you know, oh, the shoe's on the other foot. Now it's a 1-1 series, and they're the ones that are reeling. So I always maintained it does. It takes two games to make a series. So we're at that point. We have a series that's within a hair's breadth, really, of winning and losing two games. So minor adjustments here and there. We've already discussed a lot of them. You don't have to worry about your goaltending. Goaltending's been spectacular, especially in that game, game two. So Vasi doesn't have to be perfect, and neither does Bobrovsky. It maybe looks like they play that way, but they both know that their teams can score. And I think that's a comforting feeling for them. Like, I'll go out there and I'll play. Vasi's been famous for when the game's on the line, and even if the team is playing not very well for 6 or 8 minutes or maybe a period, he'll make those one or two saves where you go, oh, at the end of the game, you and I talk all the time, Dave, and go, remember that save there at the end of the first or beginning of the second? And, you know, Vasi this and Vasi that, and they made a big mistake, and he made this, yeah. That's his MO. That's why they win Stanley Cups and why Vasilevsky is Vasilevsky. But he doesn't have to be perfect. And I think he's learned that over the course of his career. He'll make those big saves. Lightning can go back the other way. And those swings from making a big save to going down to the other end of the ice and scoring a goal, that's what changes momentum. That's what wins games. The teams, oh, you have to, from top to bottom, everybody has to play solid. But great players win you games, and great players win you championships. And the Lightning have a lot of great players.
Brian, we appreciate you, sir. Have fun calling the game tonight, and we'll see you at the rink soon.
Thank you. Thanks,
thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Dave.
There he goes. Brian Engblom joining us here on our show. If you want to react to anything Brian had to say, you can hit us up on X at Bolts Radio. He is Dave Mishkin. I am Greg Linelli. We are getting you set for Game 3 tonight. Anything stand out for you, partner?
Well, look, I think Brian and I have been around each other, I don't know, too long, but certainly a long time, because I think his takeaways from the first two games are very much in line with my takeaways from the first two games, which really centered around what the Lightning were doing defensively, which is why we kind of feel like they've actually done a lot of good things in the series, understanding they need to generate more. But as Brian said, like, you have to be okay going into a game saying, we may need to win this game 1-0. We may not get a lot of scoring chances, but we have to make sure we're not giving up scoring chances. And I think from that standpoint, the Lightning have done pretty well. They've been good. I think we've heard this from John Cooper, Brandon Hagel. They've been good. They've not been good enough. And a key mistake here or a crucial error there has opened the door for the Panthers to make the extra play. So tonight, the Lightning have to find a way to make the extra play. But they can't all of a sudden abandon the areas that have worked for them so far in the series. They have to continue to check. They have to continue to limit turnovers. They have to continue to clear pucks when they have a chance. And then try and do a little bit more offensively. Hitting the net would help. John Cooper was asked about that this morning. He said, well, there's a lot that goes into it. I mean, you have to make sure your shot, if it's from a longer distance, does not get blocked by the first guy up high. Well, that might mean that you're changing the trajectory of the shot and maybe it's missing the net. I think maybe there's been some of that. He also talked about, and this would be more of a shot block, you know, guys are going to the net and it's just a massive humanity in front of the opposing goalie, hard to get shots through. But I think also on the other side of the spectrum of why are your shots not getting through to Bobrovsky, the Lightning have had some open looks and they're blasting away and they're missing the net. And Brian's right. The first goal that they scored in the series can be a template for what they need to do. Shot save, shot goal. One right after the other. But it's not automatic against a really good defensive team that you're going to be able to get your shots through.
I'm going to be, by the way, his analysis of Crozier, I think, was interesting and spot on. Kind of watch Crozier play on the back end. You feel like he can do some things with the puck.
Mm-hmm.
Good passing, can dangle a little bit in tight spaces. And I thought we saw a little bit of that, actually, in game two, even though I was critical of the Bennett goal where the puck kind of just went through him and
yeah.
he had a tough, kind of handcuffed him a little bit. But I mean, John Cooper's won way more games than I have. So
yeah.
he's good with who he wants to throw out there. I didn't mind Crozier playing, and I'd actually like to see him in the lineup moving forward, but you know,
we'll
kind of see what happens tonight.
Yeah, that's why I asked Brian. So, I mean, we can read between the lines about who stayed out late and who didn't. So Pervix was off the ice. Pervix is ready to go. And I don't think the Lightning want to have a lineup with five right-handed defensemen. So, and they're not going to dress seven. I think Brian's right. You know, one of the reasons why they dressed seven was they had two young defensemen and they were playing together. So they wanted some other options. But I keep going back to this fact, Greg, and we talked about it on the show yesterday. Two facts, actually. Max Crozier played more than both DeHaan and Dumba in game two. And this was the one that really struck me because he had the puck, so I called his name, and I knew how much time was left in the game. Max Crozier is out on the ice in the final minute of the third period in a 2-2 game. That tells you everything you need to know about how the coaches feel about him and the responsibility that they are willing to give him and the trust that he has earned. But this may be as much about configuring the lineup as him doing something right or doing something not right. I don't think he did anything wrong in game two. I think this is more of a Pervix is ready to go, and we're going to go back with the lineup we used in game one, which, you know, that lineup did a pretty good job for the Lightning defensively.
Yeah.
Just didn't generate enough.
I'll be curious to see if Bobrovsky can continue this level of play, too.
Yeah.
And maybe this is just him now, you know? And
but
that would be
I actually felt like he was a little...
You thought early on,
well,
right?
I don't know if shaky is probably too strong of a word. He was bobbling pucks early in the game. By early, I mean, like, until the Lightning scored their second goal. And what Brian was talking about, like that Stamkos shot was an unstoppable shot, the one that tied the game at 2 in the second period. But from that point onward, he got locked in. And he was fantastic. So we'll see. Look, he's human like everybody else. He may have an off night. The team in front of him though, makes it manageable for him when he has an off night, right? And often this year he has not had an off night. He's been very, very good this year. His numbers bear that out.
What are you most anxious about tonight with this Lightning team and how they're going to perform? We keep talking about the power play. Maybe, I think for me, it's how often did we talk about this when other teams, Dave, were trying to change the momentum of a game or a series? What are you going to do with that momentum? And I think a lot of people felt like the Lightning let a lot of those opportunities by the wayside in game two. I want to see when they do get a moment or a few minutes or a power play, are they able to take advantage of that opportunity more tonight than what we've seen in the previous two games?
Well, you said anxious. Maybe I would say anxious to see what I would like to see. I would like to see them maintain a fairly high defensive level. I would like to see them get more shots through to the net. I would like to see them make the Panthers uncomfortable for longer stretches. And if they get a power play, let's see the power play that finished first in the NHL this year. I mean, let's be honest. You know, they scored a 6-on-4 goal with 10 seconds left where they had a 2-man advantage, and they made a play on that. And Stamkos, I mean, it wasn't like they did anything special on the Stamkos goal. He did all the work. Like, I mean, they set him up for the shot, but he made a perfect shot. I'd like to see the power play make the Panthers really uncomfortable. And that's contingent on a couple of things. First of all, that the Lightning get power play chances. And the second is that they execute. They execute the way that they can. I'm also interested to see the matchups. Now that John Cooper has last change, will he try and get Kucherov away from Gustav Forsling? Will he try and fail because Paul Maurice is going to do everything he can to get Forsling out on the ice, even though he doesn't have last change? What will the matchups look like with Bennett unavailable? Kucherov took an option this morning, so the Lightning didn't have their full lineup out there skating, but I did see Duclair with Cirelli and Stamkos. So I don't know if that's an indication that Hagel's going to be playing with Point and Cooch. I'm curious about that too, because the Lightning have last change. So who do they want out against Barkov's line? You would figure that Cirelli and Hagel would be together, but maybe not. So I think there are some questions that will get answered. But those are some of the things that I'm looking forward to seeing. I hesitate to use the word anxious, but I am looking forward to see how this unfolds tonight.
Let's get to some questions too. Andrew, whose question I read to Brian, also said, has Kucherov being clamped helped free up Point and Duclair? Will they still have as much space on home ice these next two games?
Well, look, Kucherov has to find a way to be able to make plays and be a difference maker. It's not going to be easy. And he doesn't need to make 15 plays. But I think that he can have more of an impact on this series than he has been able to do in the first two games. And maybe having the last change will help.
I think that's fair. I think, Duclair has had some moments. And we talked about it in game two.
Yeah. I mean, was that more of a question about Kucherov or Duclair?
Probably about Duclair.
So, I mean, if Duclair is moving to a different line, his assignment might shift a little bit, right? Like, they may use whoever Cirelli's playing against. They want to play in the offensive zone. Cirelli's line has done well in the series, mostly with Stamkos and Hagel. But they're going to look for Duclair to make sure that, you know, they're taking care of business defensively. If he's playing with Cirelli.
Yeah. This is a funny one. NHL / MS Paint says, I'm just commenting because we've won every game the day my questions are on the air. Hello. Well, I appreciate
superstitious
that.
Fans?
I like that.
What?
Isn't that good?
I've never heard of such a thing.
I love it. I wonder how many are growing their beard.
Yep.
You got to get that going. Nikita says, I'd love to see RD push the zone more in game three. We did okay at stretching the Panthers out in the second period, but we could create chances with rushes into the zone by RD. That being said, Vassie is the GOAT. I expect Cooch to light it up tonight.
Not sure what he means by push the zone. Does he mean, like, join the rush?
Maybe that's what he means.
Well, again, if you're going to join the rush, fine. You might open some things up offensively, but you also might open things up defensively. So it has to be strategic. It has to be smart. But, yeah, I mean, that's part of the Lightning's game plan. They want their D to jump up in the play. We've seen Radish do it. Certainly Hedman does it. We've seen Radish do it. We've seen Chernak do it. For sure. Dumba. I mean, Dumba's shot where Bobrovsky pulled the rabbit out of his hat. I mean, he was certainly up in the play on that one. That wasn't so much. I mean, it was kind of off the rush, but he came in late as the trailer.
No doubt. Good question.
Yeah.
I like him. Who else has questions? Yes, Chris. He said, Cooch got his 100 assists. Now it's time to dominate the scoring line. Goals, goals, goals. When they have to worry about him scoring, it will open up the other guys like Point, Stammer, and Paul.
Well, I think that's what we're hearing. I mean, he's really talking about power play, but 5-on-5 or power play. If Kucherov is looking to shoot first and pass second, that will open other things up. And in fairness, on that 4-minute power play that we talked about at length yesterday, I mean, Kucherov was shooting the puck. He was just missing the net. He had some opportunities, and they went high, they went wide. He was going for the upper corner and missed.
You know, it's always interesting because people will say, you know, well, look, if he's getting assists, what does it matter if he's scoring goals? He's helping with the production there. And I always feel like maybe it's just more of a feel thing. I feel like when you're scoring goals, your game is just, it feels like it's taking on a different aspect of things than if you're getting primary or secondary assists.
So Kucherov is a different player than, let's use Austin Matthews as an example, guy who scored 69 goals this year. If Austin Matthews is not scoring goals, that'll be a problem for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They need him to score. Kucherov can do, I mean, Austin Matthews can pick up assists too, but Matthews isn't the playmaker that Kucherov is. Very few players in the NHL can make plays like Kucherov can make plays. But in the Kucherov example, you're right, he can contribute by dishing pucks to teammates who score. But I think what we're saying is that if he is looking to score himself, whether he scores or not, that will change to some degree how the Panthers are going to try to stop him. It creates another problem for them. And it's like, what hole are you going to cover? It's like Brian said, like they're looking to cover the guys that Kucherov wants to pass to, as well as trying to get in on him and force him to make a quick decision. Well, if he can start shooting, now you have to worry about him putting the puck in the net himself. And that might open up some other options. Maybe the Matthews example wasn't a great analogy, but you know what I'm saying? Like, when Matthews gets the puck, you worry about him shooting. When Kucherov gets the puck, you worry about him passing. But if Kucherov starts shooting, that's another wrinkle that complicates matters for the opposing team.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think Kucherov is dynamic, although I feel like when you do score goals, it just boosts your confidence even more. But yeah. I think maybe Kucherov might be the exception. Does he love it more when he's just feeding and threading the needle and making passes that nobody else can envision? Probably. So I want to be fair there. But I just feel like when Kucherov's scoring, it's maybe it's more of a tactical thing, because if he's shooting and scoring, maybe teams have to deal with that aspect of his game a little bit more, and then that opens up him dishing the way he can. So it might be more of a tactical thing, Chris, for me, than, hey, I just think Kucherov needs to score. I think when he's doing that, it opens up his passing game probably even more. Chris also says, Kucherov needs to get back to the way he played through 3/4 of the season when he carried this team, a shoot-first mentality. Must be more aggressive. Same for the defenseman. Sure would be nice to get some shots on net from the D. If so, good chance it's 2-1 after tonight. So he wants more shots through. Of course, the second part of that equation, partner,
you got to get those shots through.
Yes.
And I think that has also been an interesting dynamic through the series. And maybe we shouldn't be surprised, because there's a level of desperation in playoff hockey that probably is going to impact how many shots actually get through and onto the goaltender.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's fair to say, get that shot through the first line of defense. I'm okay if it's a little wide. If it's a purposely you miss the net because there's just no lane, but you're hitting it off the end boards for hopefully a juicy rebound, that can happen. I think they want to see some pucks moving more in that direction.
Right.
We'll get a feel for it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. We'll get a feel for it. What we have seen for much of the series, and by much of the series, I'm really saying 5 of the 6 periods, other than the overtime period, although this was true in overtime as well, short as it was, the Lightning have not spent a lot of time in the offensive zone. The points when they have spent time in the offensive zone, they've gotten very little from that time in the offensive zone. They're forced to pass it and not shoot, or they choose not to shoot, or they shoot and they miss the net, or they shoot and it's blocked. And I think what we are saying in a variety of different ways is we want to see the Lightning, first of all, try and get more time in the offensive zone for game 3 and be way more dangerous when they have the puck in the offensive zone. Which is almost more, in a way, it's more important. I mean, it's not more important, because if you have the puck in the offensive zone more, that means the Panthers have less of an opportunity to spend time in your end. But if you were to ask me, would you rather have more time in the offensive zone and produce not as much, or less time in the offensive zone and be really productive with that time in the ozone and create a whole bunch? At this point, I would say, give me the latter. Give me less time in the ozone. I'm going to rely on how well I've been defending to this point in the series. But the time I have in the offensive zone, I want it to be really, really effective and productive. Ideally, you'd like both. You want the time of possession and the ability to turn that possession into something good. It just hasn't happened enough for the Lightning in the series, and I think the Panthers deserve quite a bit of credit for that, honestly. The one time the Lightning made the Panthers look ordinary, and I will use that term, defensively, was the second period in game 2, and what Brian said is absolutely true. They got some momentum. Started getting some swagger, right?
Yeah.
And the opposite was true for the Panthers. They shrunk a little bit. Like, hey, we just had this first period. We're up 1-0 in the series. We're up 2-0 in game 2. We're the best defensive team in the league. We held them to 3 shots on net. We got this, boys. All of a sudden, boom, boom, 2-2. That can have an impact on a team. Then they got that save from Bobrovsky. I mean, it wasn't a direct line because the Lightning had chances after that, too. But I think that helped them puff their chest out a little bit as well. So momentum is real. Let's see if the Lightning can grab it and then use it, which is something you talk about, Craig. When you get the momentum, what do you do with it? See if the Lightning can hurt the Panthers tonight if they can get the wind at their back.
Hit us up on X at Bolts Radio, and that would be tremendous if you did. Tampa Bay 1-2-1-4, or I could have just said 12-14, but you know sometimes I can't read that. Said Kucherov didn't come for the optional skate with everyone else there. It's not the beach day, so I would have assumed he would participate. Is he battling something, Mish?
Well, Eric was cut off at the pass by Coop before the coach press conference even started, and he basically said everybody's available to play tonight. I have no idea. I mean, Vasi took the option as well. No Johansson, though. I mean, we have not seen him on the ice.
What do you make of that? I mean, he's definitely not day-to-day.
I mean, it's got to be, what, 3-4 weeks at this point?
For sure.
Yeah.
That's not month-to-month or day-to-day, is it? It's a little different.
Well, just a lot of days. One right after the other at this point.
Tampa Bay Lightning fan 21 says, home crowd should play a huge factor tonight. Got to stay obnoxiously loud at all times tonight, no matter what.
The person also says, envision us staying 11-7 or going back to 12-6? Question mark.
I think it's 12-6. I think based on who came off. But sorry, go ahead.
No. And they said, I'd like to see Janot back in the lineup to rock some of these cats into the boards.
So when you talk about what did a deep playoff run do for the Panthers, I think one of the things it did for them and most of the team that they had last year is back. Like, loud buildings that are cheering against them, that's not going to affect them. They aren't going to wilt. Maybe they will. I mean, if they do, that would be great for the Lightning. But they're not going to wilt in the spotlight in the face of adversity. I mean, for crying out loud, they won elimination games in Boston in games 5 and 7, right? They won 3 games in Toronto. They won 2 games in Raleigh. I mean, they know how to play on the road in the playoffs and not let a noisy building affect them. But I think what Tampa Bay Lightning fan 21 is talking about is maybe the Lightning using that crowd to give them juice. And if that happens, that would be a very positive effect of a noisy building.
The crowd getting into it always helps. Teams can build off of that momentum. And those surges maybe last a little longer, but you're right. I mean, what do you do with that momentum? And this fan also wanted to ask, any word on Bennett or Forsling? Both seemed banged up last game. Curious your thoughts on how that'll impact tonight's game. But we know Bennett's going to be out.
Yeah, Forsling's going to play. I didn't realize Forsling was banged up. I didn't notice that. But Bennett was, and Bennett's going to miss a week.
That is a huge blow. I mean... It really is, because he's one of those players you love having on your team you probably don't like playing against. He's just – I mean, Dave, would you say he's one of those guys that not only is he towing the line, he goes over the line? Puts a little fear in you.
Yes. No, he does.
Right? Yeah.
Him, Cousins, Lomberg. But Bennett has more offensive upside, certainly. Like, he's just a more well-rounded overall player than either of those other guys who are NHLers. I mean, they're really, really good players, and they've been effective for the Panthers. But, you know, Bennett's their second-line center. Enough said. You're pulling him out of the lineup.
You know, there was a time when he was in Calgary where he was considered just a flop.
He was – I mean, we didn't see Calgary that much, but I remember when we would play Calgary, he was invisible. It's almost like the trade to the Panthers was the best thing that could have happened to him.
Rejuvenated him, right?
Yeah. I mean, what was he?
And that
third,
can happen.
Third overall pick or fourth overall pick, and like the weight of expectations maybe coming in, having to really help a franchise get back to where they were, certainly in the, you know, mid-2000s when they played the Lightning in the Stanley Cup final. Who knows? I mean, a young player. I think he joined the Flames as a teenager, if I'm remembering right. And by the time he arrived in Florida, first of all, he arrived and joined a pretty good team, a team on the upswing, and was a little bit older, right? And he didn't come in as, oh, he's like a top 5 overall pick. He's just a good player that we added to our team. He's been very good for the Panthers.
More
The Panthers have made some really savvy additions. And, I mean, you look at – so Ekblad was a draft pick first overall, but, you know, they traded for Matthew Tkachuk and Barkov. Barkov went second overall. But they were there as the team was struggling.
Yeah.
So when they got really good, how did they get really good? So the Bobrovsky contract is what it is, but, you know, they did sign him as a free agent. They acquired Brandon Montour. They got Forsling on waivers. They acquired Bennett. They signed Verhaeghe. They traded for Tkachuk. They traded for Reinhardt. Lundell was a draft pick. Luostarinen, who's in their top 9, they got via trade. I mean, they've built their team not really through the draft. But it's not like they just brought in a bunch of aging veterans. They got guys who were young in the upswing of their career. They weren't homegrown. Very impressive the way the Panthers have done it.
Let's get to one more.
The salary cap clock, though, will be tolling for the Panthers in the next couple of years, as we have talked about, which they don't need to worry about that right now. but that's the reality of the situation. You pay for your success in terms
Andrew
of having to say goodbye to some guys.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right, and you're right about some of the signings they've had in the trades over the last few years. They have been savvy. And let's face it, too. Bobrovsky playing at this level is turning out to be what they envisioned, probably, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
and maybe Spencer Knight will be the goalie of the future. And actually, they didn't even draft him. They got him in a trade, right?
That is true.
I'm getting my goalies confused. I think they got him in a trade. Anyway, he's a younger guy. But for now, it's Bobrovsky's net. For sure.
Love it. Andrew says, also, I thought some of the reactions to the Bobrovsky save were a little excessive on blame going to Dumba. I thought he did all he could there. On his backhand, less control over where the puck is going. If he moved to his forehand, Montour would have gotten to him. Your thoughts?
By the way, just a clarification, Knight was a Panthers draft pick. So I got him confused with Devin Levi, who was traded to Buffalo and was not a first-round pick, if memory serves. Although I think, did both guys play at BC? Now I got to look that up. I will answer the question. Devin Levi, he went in the seventh round. He went to Northeastern. So they were both in the Boston area. Panthers traded him in the Reinhardt deal. So that deal looks pretty good for the Panthers right now. So I'm not sure that Dumba could have done anything. I mean, he could have done something different. He could have slid along the ice. It would have been in the net. I don't think Dumba did anything wrong. I think people are talking about the save because it was such a remarkable save. I mean, yeah, there was probably more than a little bit of luck involved in the save, but as we talked about yesterday, Bobrovsky allowed the stars to align by making the reaction that he did. He didn't just give up on the play. He tried to make himself as big as he could and gave himself the chance to be lucky. Maybe that's the way I would put it. And he was. But it's not like Dumba knew the arm was going to be there when he took the shot. I mean, Bobrovsky's swinging his arm around and the puck just hit it. And I said this yesterday. I think if Dumba waits and puts it on his forehand, it's more likely that something bad is going to happen. Maybe he bobbles it. Maybe Bobrovsky has more time to get over. Maybe a Florida player, the fan mentioned Montour, is able to get into the play and disrupt it. He did the right thing. He hurried the puck to the net. Goalie made the save. What are you going to do? But I don't think that you can overstate how amazing the save was. It was.
Agreed. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us today. We're going to be back at it again tomorrow in this setting. We're going to tape tomorrow's show. But get those questions in. I want to give our audience that opportunity to do it as soon as the game ends to, if you're up, still get those questions to us at Bolts Radio and be very important. We'll have a lot to discuss. Look, it's either going to be 2-1, Dave, or the Lightning are going to be in serious trouble.
Yes.
I mean, that's
kind
of
what
we are.
Can only take it one game, as they say, one game at a time. But
it's a cliche for a reason.
We'll leave the fans with this, and this is certainly stating the obvious, but I'm just going to say it again to remind everyone. There is an enormous difference between 3-0 and 2-1. I mean, at 3-0, they are really going to be hard-pressed to find a way to get through the series. I mean, that's putting it gently. 2-1, it's anyone's series. That's how big this third game is for the Lightning. Panthers have a mulligan tonight. They're probably saying, we need just one of these two. If we can get tonight, great, we'll go for the sweep. Lightning need this game tonight.
Are you saying they're playing with house money?
Well, I remember enough series over the years where the Lightning had home ice. They won the first two at home. They lose game three on the road, but then win game four and often be able to then close out the series in five. So that's the reality of it. The Panthers have earned themselves a little bit of breathing room here. I don't think that they're going to let up, but that's the reality. The Lightning have hardly any margin for error at this point. No, they're not eliminated if they lose, but they still understand they absolutely positively need this game tonight.
I would agree. Partner, I'll see you in a little bit.
Yeah.
Should be a lot of fun.
See you tonight.
playoff hockey. It's the best. Steve Versnick, thank you. Thanks to Brian Engblom, and thanks to you for listening. I'm Greg Linnelli. You've been listening to Power Lunch right here on Lightning Radio.